Greetings, commanders, and welcome to episode 500.5 of Lave Radio, still the hottest show this side of Dizzo. The show's continuing mission to talk about the universe of Elite and the fantastic community that surrounds it. I'm your host, second technician Fozza Forrester, and joining me in the Orange Sidewinder for this special episode are a bunch of old friends that I have not spoken to in way too long. Starting off with the boss, welcome back to the airwaves, Lave Station Commander, Dr. Alan Stroud, in-game name, Helderman Kell.
Hello!
Joining Alan is our Head of Entertainment, Commander Thane, Mr. Christopher Jarvis.
Jesus. I'm just letting the flashbacks wash over me, it's all good. Hello.
Hello. And taking a well-earned break from keeping the lights on, the air breathable, and everybody's feet on the deck, Chief of Operations Commander Glyndŵr, Mr. John Stabler.
Good evening.
And keeping us all in check and providing the Lavium brandy, we have the station's Chief Bar Steward, Mr. Grant Psycho Cow Woolcott.
Hello!
Hi guys, well, normally you could hang out with us in-game, but as we have stolen the Orange Sidewinder and none of us can remember our key bindings, we've ended up in Witch Space. Hopefully Stabler will have us out of here before the end of the show. And before we get into it, we're going to do things a bit bass-ackwards. Normally we save the shout-outs to the end of the show, but for this special edition, I think it's only right that we do them at the beginning of the show. We, as the old guard, have to shout out to the current crew of the Orange Sidewinder, Colin, Ben, Alex, Claire, and of course it wouldn't happen without the tech crew, Norman, Jan, and of course the two Chrises. It takes a lot of time and commitment to keep something like Lave Radio on the air each week, making sure you're on top of the latest information both in-game and the metaverse outside the game. And much as we love them, Frontier do not always make this an easy task to bring fresh weekly news and content to the show, but the crew do an amazing job of rounding up the weekly events and getting input from the community for interesting topics each and every week. So, Remlock's off to all of them, and let's hope for as long as there's an Elite Dangerous, there will always be a crew of awesome misfits prepared to do a show about it. So congratulations, Lave Radio crew, on reaching 500 amazing episodes.
Yeah, well done, guys.
So, with the most important job done, let's see if we can fill up some airtime. We will start with a quick run around the ship. If you could briefly introduce yourselves for the sake of new listeners and maybe remind some of the old ones, let us know what you've been up to since your last show and maybe your favourite activity in Elite Dangerous. Starting off with the boss, Dr. Alan Stroud.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Stroud. I used to occasionally write a bit of music, occasionally write a bit of book, and generally offer some nefarious opinions in relation to Elite Dangerous when we first started the podcast. Yeah, it's been a while. The standout moments probably for me in the early part of the stuff where we're in the alpha and the beta,
Back up. That's our main topic. Let us start off with the fact that when you first got into this ship, you weren't a doctor. Maybe you want to go with the fact that you are now a doctor, and also what amazing thing you are actually a doctor of.
Okay, that's probably better. Yeah, well done. So essentially my PhD was based on some of the work I did with Frontier. My doctorate is in writing structures and world building techniques in science fiction and fantasy, and most of the application of that work now is with UK government. So I now work with the Ministry of Defence. I work with a variety of other government organisations as well, essentially looking at future mapping and horizon scanning and using quite a lot of the material that I did in my PhD and originally that I kind of did with Frontier. So, yeah.
Awesome. I didn't realise that at all. That was not the way I thought your PhD was going to take you, if I'm honest, buddy.
Yeah, well, you know, these things happen. It was slightly odd, and it's still kind of, I'm still sort of living in a slightly surreal world in that regard, but you know, it's always nice to live in a surreal world, right?
Yeah, and you're still doing stuff for the cons as well?
Yeah, so we ran LaveCon for 10 years. That also is a massive highlight for my experience with the community and everything else. And then one of the reasons we stopped running LaveCon was because we were running FantasyCon, which is a book convention, and we're running World Fantasy Convention in 2025, so which is, you know, global fantasy convention with all the The Great and the Good of Fantasy coming to Brighton in October next year. So all very exciting.
So a little bit busy to say the least. What about when you were playing Elite Dangerous, when you had the time and you were committed to it, what was your favourite thing to do in game? What was your character? Did you role play it? Were you just a space trucker? What did you like doing?
I mean, I think my favourite moment was there was a guy who basically started to interdict the Lave system at one point and was kind of giving really good chat trolling to people. And I went after him. And, you know, the probably the most favorite memory I have is completely screwing that up, but having a very, very good in-character insult match with this guy, you know, who randomly was interdicting loads and loads of ships in the system. That was tremendous fun, you know, in that it was all done in the right way, you know, and everything else. Probably general play. I didn't do a lot more than some of the basic stuff. I mean, we may remember there is a show, if anybody wants to go and go through the archive, there is a show where I got my vehicle on the surface of a planet trapped in a box. the guys had to help me wheel it out, which was all good fun. That was when we first got to, you know, drive around on the surface of stuff. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's been a while since I've played, so quite a lot of the newer things are being done, you know, for quite some time I haven't seen.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I think that's going to be the same for most of us. So moving on to you, Mr. Jarvis, what have you been up to, and what was your favourite thing to do in-game, or is your favourite thing to do in-game?
Yeah, what have I been up to? It's hard to think. Do you know what? You say, like, introduce ourselves to people who don't know. If people don't already know who we are, why on earth are you listening to this? I mean, really, really. But no, so my name's Chris Jarvis. Was obviously part of the original lineup for Lave Radio. I've produced the Elite fan drama, audio drama, Escape Velocity. And then after that, yeah, I sort of had a bit of a go at, you know, sort of trying to make a business out of producing audiobooks and audio dramas. Yeah, I mean, that didn't work out. So the thing I've been doing recently is I've been training. I'm basically preparing to start a new job as a secondary school teacher.
So oh, cool.
That's the big change for me. Obviously, I've had my daughter. She's been around. Not sure what else I've done, really. I don't know. Everything since 2020 has been a bit of a blur.
Yeah, I think we can all relate to that, buddy. Yeah, okay, yeah. What about your favourite thing in-game, then, when it wasn't producing audiobooks and creating content for the amazing Escape Velocity? What did you enjoy just getting out in the black and doing?
I did have some quite good fun doing some role play stuff with some of my drama series supporters. That was good fun. I always just liked flying the ship. I have definitely learned about myself that one thing I really don't like is multiplayer video games. I think when I was originally on the show, I was still kind of like hedging my feelings a little bit about multiplayer games.
I don't think you were, fella. I honestly don't think you were. This isn't a new thing for you.
No, it's just a hard no. I mean, my daughter gets me to play. We were playing on this Minecraft server where there was like Capture the Flag. It just made me angry. And, you know, it's not a good place to be. So I always really liked Elite as like a flight simulator. I really liked the way the ships handled. I got such a thrill out of just flying those ships and kind of going from point to point. The one kind of multiplayer thing that I remember really enjoying was the long Hutton Truckers kind of hauls that we used to do. But I'll be honest, I mean, yeah. I say that was my bit of multiplayer that I enjoyed. Because of the problems we used to have with instancing, I think for most of that, I didn't see anybody anyway. I mean, you know, I was talking to people in chat, but I'm not sure I actually saw many other ships.
So it was the best part of it was imagining you were playing with other people, but not actually playing with other people.
Actually, the best part of it was what I used to do, because at the time I still used to do a bit of streaming, was I'd set up an overlay use on the streaming program, whatever it's called. So I set it up so that I could look at it on my streaming screen, and it looked like I had a little TV sitting on like on my ship console, and I put on in-flight movies. So we'd be doing these long Hutton trawls, and I'd be watching, like, I don't know, The Matrix or something as like an in-flight movie. And I could kind of, you know, imagine that's what was happening. So that was always my favourite thing. I think, you know, I'm sure we're going to get into what, you know, the stuff that we think that was really good about Elite. And I, for me, just the process of flying the ships, the whole thing around that was just an absolute joy.
Cool. Well, I'll get you to double down on that, but I'll move on to Mr. Stabler. What about you? What have you been up to? And what's your favourite thing in game, mate?
Hey, how's it going? To introduce myself, I'm John Stabler. I was the idiot who back in the day volunteered himself saying, I've done a podcast before, I can do editing. And then it all went downhill from there. What have I been doing since then? Well, the thing is, Lave Radio has still been like a big part of my life, even though I wasn't on the podcast, because we still did LaveCon every year. You know, and I went to every single one of them, and I loved it. Every single time I enjoyed myself. So it feels like I haven't been away from it that much until, obviously, you know, the last LaveCon, and the fact that Alan and Karen aren't going to be doing it anymore because they've got much bigger and brighter things to move on to. And I don't know what Chris Jarvis saying, oh, if you don't know who we are, you know, I might actually agree with that sentiment, but I got a little story about how, without realizing it, I kind of became famous in my mother-in-law's eyes. So my wife had to go to a hospital to have some blood drawn, and her mother went with her because she's like me. She gets a bit flaky if she has blood taken out. And so the guy's taking the blood and he's talking to her. And he's like, oh, so what are you up to this weekend? She goes, oh, I'm going to the gaming convention with my husband. And he's like, oh, right, okay, that's interesting. She goes, yeah, it's for this game he plays, Elite Dangerous. And he goes, oh, I play Elite Dangerous. And she goes, yeah, he was on the podcast, wasn't he? He's like, so he looks at her notes and her name, and he goes, what, your husband's the John Stabler? So that, I think that counts as my 15 minutes of fame.
Mate, so, that's awesome. And that's never happened to me. So congratulations.
What have I been doing since then? Well, apart from like LaveCon and looking forward to that, I've been doing my job. I still work for NHS Wales, writing software for healthcare. I've still been dabbling in my own kind of software projects. I think at the last LaveCon, I launched the alpha of my game Spinjewel. I don't know if many people remember playing that. I've since realized that it's a dangerous product that should be kept away from people with gambling tendencies. So probably best that I just shelve that one. I'm currently working on a web app for some friends, acquaintances of mine. I play airsoft to keep fit, and I'm really friendly with the guys who run the local site, and together we're developing a web app which uses GPS tracking and QR codes on mobile phones to implement kind of role-playing elements and to kind of create interesting objectives apart from just the usual capture the flag and things like that. So that's what I'm doing at the moment. Now, what's my favorite moment? Well, my go-to, and this is going to be really sad, is I just loved resource extraction sites. Mm. It seemed to be the way that I wouldn't say it was like boring or anything, but it was a way for me to kind of shut off but still be active. Like the concept of going back and forth to hit an orbital. Yeah, I didn't have the TV idea like Chris Jarvis. Otherwise, maybe I'd have done it. I think I only went to Hutton once. Go and buy a mug. But yeah, I used to spend so much time bounty hunting, and the amount of money I made just bounty hunting, it just eclipsed everything else I did in the game, whether that be mining or trading in a type 10 defender. I did that quite a bit at one point. So I was actually doing really old school stuff, you know, stuff that I could have just done in Frontier, to be honest. So I don't, maybe I shouldn't have bothered buying Elite Dangerous.
Nice. Mr. Woolcott, I'm sure most people will still recognise your dulcet tones, but for those people who don't know you, introduce yourself and let us know what you've been up to and what's your favourite thing to do in Elite Dangerous.
Yeah, hello everybody. I'm Grant Woolcott, also known as Commander Psycho Cow. And yeah, it's been a sort of transitional life moment where COVID finally sort of finished off my business recently. I am unemployed for the first time in my life, which is fun. Definitely a new experience. Frustration is the word. And unfortunately, because of that, also means that Commander Simon, my brother, is also unemployed and he's hating it. So it's, as I say, transitional. The future is still bright, so we'll just keep plodding on and we'll work our way towards whatever comes next. Susie's in the other room just now, but I don't think she's working. It sounds like she's killing zombies. That's, that's quite a common thing for her.
Nice.
But other than that, things I've been doing, I'm always still doing the live streams on a Friday night, the pub quiz that we do, and then we go into a couple of hours on Wreckfest battling, and we've done that every week since before COVID. I think it's become quite a staple for a number of people that just enjoy having something at the end of the week where they'll meet up with some friends, and I try to keep it as sort of relaxed as that, and just allowing people to have a bit of a giggle. It can be inappropriate sometimes. I try and steer it away from mistakes of the past, and certainly we've learned a lot over the years as time changes, and you realize that a lot of the language we used to use as kids is no longer allowed. You just can't get away with it. So yeah, it's an interesting time, as I say, transitional. I'm quite reflective of it and enjoying some of the time that I've got to look at. I'd like to get back into some of the creative endeavors, but they'll just need to wait. We're about to fire up a new Eurobismal Song Contest. I don't think you've ever done one of those. Was there? We did them when Eurovision got cancelled due to COVID.
Right.
And I just basically created a website. Well, I say I did. I came up with an idea, and then I made Simon code it and make it work. And you essentially would get a random assigned country, and you would have to scour YouTube for a song and video to represent your country in our online version of Eurovision that we called Eurobismal. Then we had the live voting on the Twitch stream, and it was brilliant fun. And we've done, I don't know how many, four or five since.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I've ever reached the heady heights of that time I submitted Bacon. Do you remember that? I think, I can't remember if it's the first or second one we did, but I had Denmark, and the only thing I know about Denmark is how much it exports bacon. And there was this song that just went bacon, 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 bacon. That was my best shot. That was my best shot, but never again.
So it's a lot of fun. Again, I'm still focused on the whole experience of, you know, playing with the community. And I think that's where I get my most enjoyment, is having fun with other people. And certainly it's still something that I enjoy. I have gone back into Elite Dangerous after, I don't know how many years of not playing, and went back to my wee home system where my planet is and my station, and found that the little player faction there had completely stripped all the assets. I thought, you know what? I love the BGS. Absolutely love the BGS and the way it makes you can have an effect in the end game. And so we took them to war. We won the station back, and then they got a bit upset. And so we kind of reached an agreement. And I said, all right, well, you know, well, I figured that if you're going to negotiate, you have to have something. So you have to take it first and then negotiate. And otherwise you're asking somebody and they're going to say no. Some of the tactics we used were, anytime a war sprung up in any other system with them, we would fight in that as well and put the pressure on them to try and spread them as thin as possible. And it went really, really well. Since then, we have agreed to stop that. So if you are still fighting them, please stop. It's really getting quite sore for them, and I think they're a bit fed up that what I've, you know, because I've made peace with them and it's not a problem, but whoever is still out there, and there's somebody doing, I think they call themselves the Bulldogs, and they are absolutely ransacking things. But that's part of my favorite part when I came back into Elite was ground combat. And I don't know if you guys have done much, but the ground missions that they put in, if you do the kind of Odyssey training mission when you log in, it takes you in this mission where you land in a station, you go around and you've got to find an old SRV, cut a panel off and extract a device from it, and then leave the station and bring it back. Those missions, especially if they are covert and you're not allowed to trigger alarms, or even the non-lethal missions as well, and that's really challenging because I tend to leave these poor little places full of dead bodies. But it's the ground combat, I didn't think I'd like it, and I absolutely love it, and it is very much a game mechanic. Didn't think I'd like engineering. I've been doing that, and the difference, I think John was talking about how the high-res zones are great for making money. You should try getting into combat zones, high combat zones. If you can get in with an engineered ship, you'll be fine. Otherwise, go in with a wing of four people and you can take missions from the station to kill a number of ships, and that will supplement your bounties by multiples of millions. Over the course of a week during the wars, we would make, over 1 billion credits in a week.
Wow, that's good effort. It's a good return.
And a lot of fun of playing. And it's, again, it's one of those things that I found where the difference between engineered and not engineered is you actually enjoy the combat. It's much more even, so you can hold your own, which is great. So I love that. And again, doing wars with other people is just, again, a lot of fun.
Cool. Okay, well, I think I'm probably the last one left. So for those people that don't know me, I am Chris Fosser-Forrester. Again, one of the original crew invited on no previous podcast experience, which made for some interesting first few episodes, to say the least. And same thing. Sort of, I drifted away from the podcast. I've been doing sort of midlife stuff, raising kids, coaching rugby, unfortunately spending too much on a 3D printer, and otherwise enjoying life. My favorite thing to do in game, I think, I haven't done it for a while, but I think probably still going to be deep core mining on asteroids. I fell in love with that when that mechanic came in for a similar reason to what you guys are talking about in terms of just being able to do stuff, be engaged and yet not be engaged. So I have the multi-monitor thing, so I'm watching something on the right-hand monitor, be it Stranger Things, and then also deep core mining on the left. You know, we could probably all take up knitting and save ourselves a ton of cash on gaming PCs, but it'd probably do the same job.
This is part of my problem. I mean, I am by and large using the same machine that I was using when Elite Dangerous launched. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've tweaked a couple of components in it to try and get a bit more performance out of it. But I think I'd be terrified to install the game now. I'm not even sure it would run.
I mean, we can come on to that, because I think actually one of the things that they have done is optimization for the game. So we'll come on to that. So main topics, guys, what we will do, again, we're hoping not to make this a full-on late radio episode of 2 hours plus. And we're hoping not to kill the poor editor that has to go through and try and make this a nice, tidy episode. So what we're going to do, we'll jump straight into the main topic, which for us is just a quick sort of round robin about what we think Frontier got right, you know, what we love about playing Elite Dangerous. And again, some of you guys have already touched upon that. Some of the standout moments that we can remember from the early days, harping back to the development era of the game, some of the stuff that was really good, got our excitement going about, you know, about the game when maybe there wasn't that much meat on the bones at the time, you know, during the beta stages and stuff like that. And then again, I appreciate you guys haven't spent a lot of time in the game recently, but yeah, maybe stuff from then or stuff that you know isn't in there that you would like to see in there. What would you still like to see Frontier incorporate into the game? So we'll start off with, you know, what did Frontier get right? And, you know, what we all love about playing Elite Dangerous. And we'll start with Mr. Stabler.
It's quite interesting because I was discussing this with my brother last night when I told him we were going to be recording to this. So I had some time to reflect. I think, although Mr. Jarvis might not agree, I think they got the multiplayer right because, I mean, it does work now. But the way that they got it to work was quite clever. I remember when the game was, when they were suggesting how they were going to do it with these different ways of playing public, private, and solo. Everybody was, oh, that's never going to work. That's never going to work. People, you know, where am I going to get my PvP from? All that kind of stuff. But I think Frontier have kind of been vindicated on the whole thing, really. But I will agree with Chris Jarvis. The feeling of flying the ships is the best out of all of the games. So that, for me, is what they got right.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. In terms of nailing the feeling of being behind that ship, and maybe we'll talk about this, about what we'd still like to see in the game, but that feeling of actually piloting the ship on that space, it was one of the things that Frontier did really well in terms of the fact it was quite a basic game. But it allowed you, gave you a big enough canvas to be able to paint the picture of what was happening in that cockpit, on those missions, in deep space. And I think even though we've got better technology and the graphics all look pretty and everything else, it's still one man and his ship sailing across the galaxy. And it still feels that connection between pilot and ship. They've done really, really well. Grant, what do you reckon?
Well, you know, I think it's really easy to sort of remember all the things that Frontier got wrong because they were really, really good at making massive mistakes. But you know what? They all tended to sort of fade out and, you know, overall they managed to make good. So I think the way that they engaged with the community certainly originally was amazing. And I think we were extremely privileged to be able to be part of that with the likes of Ed and Zach and Mike Boss before that. All those kind of experiences we had with them was wonderful. John nailed it with the whole multiplayer issues and things like that. Those game modes are definitely amazing and in fact allow people choice, which is exactly what you want. So you just want to have a wee quiet game, jump into your solo mode and off you go, or into private groups and you don't have to worry about unwanted attention. That is a really good feature. I think going back to the sort of early years bit, the thing that I remember, the jaw-dropping moment of my ship raising out onto the surface of a platform for the first time. I mean, it took us, 4 hours to get logged in, so yeah, it was massive. But when then you saw that planet, and I think one of the massive things that Frontier got right, certainly when we compared Elite to Star Citizen at first, Star Citizen's graphics looked amazing, but over the years, all the optimizations and changes and updates they've made have made the game look absolutely stunning. And I think the effects of how good their planet graphics are and how good that experience is a definite huge thing they got right.
Cool. Alan?
Probably the procedurally generated galaxy.
Yeah, good shout.
I mean, obviously as a company, they had a history of using procedural generation in what they were doing. And throughout the Kickstarter, there were videos that talked about the level of procedural generation that they were doing. And you can kind of see that has worked. They've had to think carefully about how that's implemented when it comes to it being a multiplayer game. So when Frontier First Encounters was out, you were the hero of your own story and you didn't necessarily realize it, but the whole game contracted around you. And so a lot of the news events and everything else occurred, you know, specifically around your region and stuff as to where you were. Whereas you can't do that, you know, you can't do that in a game like this. But they had to think very carefully about how the interactive experience would work. So, you know, where's your mission board? Who you're talking to? Who are the NPCs you're dealing with, et cetera, et cetera. My kind of fondness for that a little bit is that I still get people messaging me and sending me stuff on social media whenever they see Alan Stroud in game. Because, you know, he gets around. You know, he's been a pirate, he's been an explorer, he's been an assassin, he's been all sorts. He definitely gets around in game, and he seems to get his ship blown out from under him by players all the time. You know, that kind of gives me a wry smile every time I see it.
Yeah, it's a good shout. Actually, I'd completely forgotten about the fact that we're all immortalized as NPCs around the massive galaxy. I'm hoping that my NPC is a better Elite Dangerous player than I am, because I think the only PvP kill that's still recorded against my name is when I reversed my ship into John Stabler when we were actually trying to do a combat zone and blew him up accidentally. I think that is actually my only PvP kill. So I don't know if that's something I should be proud of. Probably not. But it's
at least you've got one.
And I'm forever grateful to you, to John. I really am, for giving me that one kill. But no, I absolutely suck at PvP. So again, the whole game modes and being in private and having your own private groups, or having the option to try the scary world of open, I think they did get that right. I thought that was a really good way of doing an MMO, but giving everybody their cake and letting them eat it. So, well, you're right, Alan, in terms of the fact that it's procedurally generated. Do we know what we're currently sitting at in terms of what percentage of the galaxy is actually being explored? I think we're only at something like 2%, 3% maybe of the galaxy explored still, which, considering how long that game's been out, is a phenomenal landscape to explore.
I think they've made an update on the Supercruise as well, whereby you can essentially boost it with the new SEO drives. So if you buy a new ship, you'll get one of these things. And if you sit there and Supercruise just waiting to arrive at your destination and you hit the boost button, you'll get a fright. Just a warning for you guys, because I don't think you've had it yet. Your ship will then double its speed, start flying. So I think the Hutton run is now legitimately under 40 minutes using these new systems. But your heat goes through the roof. So yeah, just watch out for that. If you're jumping in Supercruise and you've just bought a new ship, you might get a fright.
So you press that button and you basically you leave your underwear behind is what happens, yeah?
Yes, exactly. You somewhere in the past, they'll just be burning up in your... I don't know what the sort of purpose behind it is, but an awful lot of these things are It feels like over the years they put in ways to give people a wee quick foot up, a wee levelling up so that you can catch up with the top players a little bit quicker. And this seems to be a way of taking the pain out of those long flights. And I'm not sure it was needed. I'm not sure what the objective was behind those new drives, but they're good fun.
I mean, it's interesting what you said about the fact that, you know, they're doing all these tweaks, that the game has been continually optimized. And Jarvis, I know you were talking about the fact that you'd be scared to install it on your PC, but this game itself runs really well on my handheld Steam Deck. You know, the optimizations that they've put into the game over the years, it runs really nicely. So I wouldn't be at all worried about installing it on a lesser machine or a machine that's, you know, more than sort of, you know, what's mine? Mine's 7 years old now. So, and it still runs it absolutely fine. So, yeah, they've done a great job in optimizing it. And if it can run on a handheld like the Steam Deck, I never in my wildest dreams thought I'd ever get like an Elite Dangerous experience playing, sitting on the couch, using a handheld device. So that was an eye-opener for me last time I jumped into it. I still am pretty sure I can't do that with Star Citizen. Not even sure my main PC can still run Star Citizen. So, which, by the way, not to, to completely derail the conversation, but have they released Star Citizen yet? Has it actually come out? Is, can you buy it on the box set, or is it still in development?
Oh, so I know absolutely nothing about it.
I think my bathroom's going to be finished first.
Right, okay. So we're still suggesting that Star Citizen is in development. Which is just crazy when you think about the fact that it launched its Kickstarter at the same time as Elite Dangerous. And possibly that's a nice segue to talk about the Kickstarter and talk about standout moments that we have from the early development of the game. I mean, I can kick this off, but I'm going first so that nobody steals it. And that is the amazing sort of cutscene that we had that came at the launch event, where you had the massive capital ship jumping in behind the ships, and with the whole sort of title of, you know, We Bring Friends. And the cavalry arrive, and you get the first look at the massive capital ships for the Imperials and for the Federal Navy. It's just absolutely phenomenal. It's a size and scale that you just didn't see in the original game, and it showed you what sort of intention they had with the development of Elite Dangerous. John, what's your sort of standout moments from the development of the game?
Well, I there's a couple. I remember the first alpha and playing that, and kind of been blown away by the whole thing. You know, it really did feel like an updated Frontier to me, and I was so blown away that I forgot to pull the throttle back after hyperdrive, after the frameshift drive, and I overheated my sidewinder in a star. In fact, I think I did that twice. So yeah, the alpha for me was great. Now, in terms of, I wouldn't say it's a recent development, but you know, a bit further along, I actually thought them bringing it to consoles was a great idea. Because a hardcore kind of space game, you'd think, is, you know, just going to be for us PC nerds. But it was quite interesting to see that, you know, there was a lot of Xbox players represented at LaveCon quite often. And I had old friends of mine who'd never bought a PC, they only had an Xbox. And then they suddenly discovered the podcast and reached out to me saying, oh, I play it on my Xbox. So, and going back to what you were saying about the Steam Deck, the fact that they managed to get the game running with an Xbox controller, considering, you know, I sit here with a HOTUS and I got all my key bindings. Thanks, Frontier. When I installed the game, all my key bindings are actually there this time. Got to give them a shout out for that one. But yeah, the fact that they managed to get it running on an Xbox controller and they built up a solid community there as well is brilliant.
Yeah. And yeah, we're keeping this positive, so we're focusing on the stuff they did right. And obviously, it was a shame that they couldn't continue to support the consoles, unfortunately. And there was obviously a massive outcry from, as you say, a really loyal set of players who no longer are able to play it on the console. And again, yeah, never going to be perfect, unfortunately, but it was great that they actually did do it. And again, with the Steam Deck, I'm playing with the same sort of Xbox controllers. It's amazing that they've managed to get all of those key bindings and all of those controls into something that you can hold in the palm of your hand. It's quite an achievement. Grant, what about you from the early days?
Well, I mean, obviously, we mentioned the time when you got out of the station, but I think one of the, I think, most tangible and exciting points in the early development was Thargoid high predictions. I just remember how people were scrambling around. There was a genuine fear for their commanders and for their ships. And it was like, who else has been high predicted? And then it was crashed in his stream. And it was like, you know, it had so much of an impact and such a beautiful game experience, that noise and soundscape and your ship disabling and being utterly helpless. Spectacular. And you know, and the Thargoid stories obviously moved on quite considerably since then, but that then led to the station rescues, which was again so beautiful. And you know, going in your, well, in my case it was a beluga, into a burning station where there's explosions that can knock your ship off to the left and the right, and the heat temperature going through the roof and your alarms going off, and you land and you get as many people on and then you get them out. That stuff was phenomenal. So I think the sort of the initial Thargoids and the rescue missions, amazing, standout moments.
Yeah, no, that does sound amazing, and makes me wish that I'd done more of it, actually, now listening to the way you talk about it. Alan, what about you, from the early days or the development of the game?
Probably two things. I mean, the fact that I spent an evening reading the draft background history to the Thargoids as written by T. James and as edited by David Braben was probably an evening I won't forget, you know, because obviously it took me all the way back to playing the original game and realizing some of the, you know, the concepts and ideas that David Braben had come up with in the first place, and where, you know, essentially he was elaborating on those a little bit, which was quite a thing. I think in terms of gameplay, we've alluded to the alpha, you know, we've talked about the alpha a lot. I was deadly in the alpha. I killed so many people in the alpha. Shout out to Colin, Phoenix Defier. You died a lot. I loved their initial rendition of the beam lasers. And the thing is, I had eye surgery back in sort of 2010. So I have 2015 vision, just a little better than 2020 vision. And suddenly I found that, you know, it's obviously it's still pixels on a screen, but, you know, I found that I was pretty dead eye with a beam laser. So that was good fun, hiding in asteroids and people not realizing that who's shooting me? Where are they? Why are they? Oh my. And bang, you know, because it's a sidewinder and they don't last that long. So yes, that was probably a highlight. I mean, we covered so much of the early development, you know, and we were so privileged to be able to cover so much of the early development. The late Michael Brooks was incredibly generous, not just, you know, in his private conversations of managing the material, but also, you know, with coming to LaveCon, with his interaction with people, with his sharing of his thoughts and his hopes. He was guarded, you know, he was appropriately guarded. He was obviously a veteran of Frontier developments once he got to work on Elite Dangerous, so he knew the internal office politics and how he would have to negotiate it. Yeah, he worked tireless hours. I don't think we perhaps realize how much of the initial release, how much of the content that was provided in the initial release, you know, certainly with the official fiction and some of the other things, was basically down to Michael doing the extra, you know, a lot of the time. He wasn't properly supported in that. He just put the extra hours in to get it done. So, yeah, I mean, you know, all of those things are going to be formative and special memories.
No, absolutely. And Michael Brooks, what an absolute legend, gone far, far too soon. A man did love his beards and his axes. There's no doubt about it. And his place in Elite Dangerous canon is absolutely, yeah, it's, yeah, you're not going to beat it. He is such a legend in the game, and what he brought to those early years, coming to the first LaveCon that wasn't a LaveCon, and just, he was such a generous guy with his time, his conversation. Yeah, definitely some of the happiest memories for me in terms of the early days of the game was around having a beer with that man. So gone, but not forgotten, I think, as far as Mr. Brooks is concerned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mr. Jarvis, what about you?
I mean, this is all going to sound very self-congratulatory, but I mean, the stuff that I really loved from the early days was us. I mean, it was such a pleasure to do the podcast and, you know, to find the audience. And I mean, I don't know if you guys remember that, you know, we'd get, before we had the alpha, we'd have like a week where what Frontier had done would be, they would have released like an image of a cannon, right? And we would talk for 2 hours about an image of this one gun. And that was kind of, you know, I mean, it was stupid because we had absolutely no context and we used to make an awful lot of stuff up. But it was, you know, it was really exciting. And it was, that was the stuff I really remember, was trying to get glimpses of how this game was going to take shape and really imagine, you know, the thing that we were going to be getting. Having none of us have played an Elite game since, well, I mean, I hadn't even played First Encounters. So, I mean, for me, it was Frontier Elite 2. That was the stuff that I really loved from the early days, was that. I mean, as I say, my relationship with multiplayer games is not a particularly positive one. So, in a sense, from my point of view, it was all a little bit downhill from there. But, I mean, I'm not denigrating anything Frontier did. I think what they built was a game that wasn't designed for someone like me. You know, that's absolutely fine. But I did, yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before, but, I mean, that first experience of flying through the letterbox of a station, particularly since the first time I did it, I'm sure was VR at one of the early...
I was going to say, yeah, I was going to come on to that, but you're absolutely right.
Sure, that was one of the first times we saw it. I don't know, but a lot of, you know, the memory is failing me. But I don't know if it's just that the first time I saw that reveal through the letterbox was so spectacular. It may as well have been VR, but it was. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. It was the thing we've been anticipating for ages. It was one of the things that was, you know, arguably most lacking in previous Elite games, because, you know, in the original Elite, you would fly towards the letterbox and it would cut to a, you know, like a text menu. In Frontier Elite 2, you would at least get the thing of being kind of taken into like a garage and the door would shut. But it was still, that was a very closed experience. So to fly into that space station and for actually that letterbox entry to not be the end of the excitement, but actually opening up this whole world inside the station that for someone like me really kind of fired my imagination about what was going on in this world. Yeah, that can't, you know, it's a very simple thing, but that couldn't be beaten for me.
Yeah, I mean, you say it's a simple thing, but you're right. They absolutely nailed it because, again, it's a blank canvas that you've got with both the Elite games all the way back to sort of the Spectrum, the NES and all of that. It was just a rectangle, lots of rectangles on screen. The rest was all filled in by your imagination. What Frontier really managed to do with Elite Dangerous is capture what you had in your imagination when you went through that rectangle and put it on screen, which... not an easy task for them to do, but they absolutely nailed that one. So, yeah, I think that's a great shout. And I suppose, again, just to wrap up this early years thing, and you're right in terms of the fact that one of the nice things about was, you know, finding the crew of the Orange Sidewinder and everybody that came along for the ride and joined as we went on. But things like going down to, I think it was at Gamescom where we first saw virtual reality and Elite Dangerous hooked up. And, you know, for some of us, it was the first time we'd experienced that level of the new Oculus headset virtual reality, and to link it up with Elite Dangerous, it was just amazing to be able to almost be like a Star Wars pilot in your cockpit doing those combat missions and looking around you trying to figure out where the attacking spacecraft were in virtual reality whilst controlling it with a hot ass on thing. It was just so immersive and so brilliantly done. It was just awesome. And of course, at those meetings we were able to actually catch up with David Braben himself, who was really generous with his time when it came to the show in terms of giving us interviews and sharing his vision about what the game is going to be.
Well, when we did the 100th, we got to properly sit down with David and, you know, do a whole thing, and that was very exciting.
Talking about Chris Jarvis saying about those early episodes and how much he loved pontificating, I just went back in the archive. Episode 6 is titled Nothing to Talk About. And the description makes it clear that there was no Frontier news and Fozzer was worried. However, it's one of the longest episodes ever at 1 hour 48. And some of the fun and interesting titles for the episodes, which I don't know if they'd still use something like this now. Episode 5, Bigger Isn't Necessarily Better. and episode 8, Smashing One Out.
Yeah, they still do that. Variation after variation after variation. I'm sure Ben's double entendres are still hard at work.
Oh, dear. Okay, so linking into the bits that we had with David, he always had a really good vision for the game. He always had an almost too much of a vision. He was always happy to share it with us, and you could always have his entourage in the background who were ever so worried about the stuff that he was saying, you know, stuff like the idea about landing on planets and going on safari. He was always very keen on that. The idea of being able to fire out a module like the old mining machine and create yourself a pirate base and an asteroid. All of these things David talked to us about on interviews at various points during the development cycle. For the final topic of this special show, what isn't in the game that you would still like them to incorporate over the next 5, 10, 20 years, or however long this game continues to flourish? And we will start off with Alan.
Zero gravity. So on your spaceship, be able to get out your spaceship or get out, you know, inside your spaceship, zero gravity in your proper gravity mechanics in the spaceship itself. When you go down to planets, more variation in relation to the gravity level on said planets. And the same on stations. If there's a gravity outage, you know, having regions where zero gravity is essentially is the order of the day. I just think in terms of innovative gameplay compared to anything else that is on the market, if you implemented those kind of changes, those kind of mechanics, so that the player had to deal with them in environments that were appropriate. We have generated gravity in this game. The space stations rotate to ensure that they have gravity there. So there are environments where things don't rotate and therefore there should be no gravity. If you implemented that, you would have something so different to games of a similar type, and it would transform certain aspects of the gameplay.
Good shout. Grant?
What Alan was just saying there, they do have the opposite of that currently in game, and high gravity planets are particularly difficult to land on. And if you're doing any kind of ground combat, jumping, like, you know, so on a nice little low G planet, you can jump off the tops of buildings, you can use your jetpack to jump quite high, but on a high G planet, it don't work. If you jump off something, you're going to die. If you use your jetpack, you're going to get much, much less high in the sky than you did on the lower G. So they've got the other side. So it kind of feels like it would be nice that they would kind of revisit that one and go on. And one of the sort of memories I've always had from, I think it must have been a LaveCon, was the when they told us that the ship interiors had already been designed. And
yeah.
So it'd be nice to see them ever come out. When I stopped playing, the thing I was waiting for was lava planets. I just loved the idea of lowering my SRV, hearing the tires slowly pop and melt, and then slowly sinking to my death. That is what I want. And I'm still dead keen. They've got lava geysers going, which are pretty, but I really want that hellscape effect and difficulty finding a bit of rock to land your ship on, and I think it would just be spectacular.
I can just see how many players are going to be standing on lava planets facing each other saying, "I have the high ground." Anyway, let's not mix our sci-fi. But yeah, it's a great shout, and I think the interior of ships is a really good one in that it was something that was really new. I think they have nailed the on-foot stuff, but it would be nice to open up a brand new avenue of that gameplay where we talked about, you know, taking over somebody else's ship. We've got carriers in game, but how nice it would be to do some sort of boarding action from your own ship to a different ship and have to take a group of mates across the boarding tunnel and take over another ship in space and do some proper pirating. I think that would be really cool. And for me, I think that's the one thing I'd love to see there. That, and I suppose for cosmetics, we saw it early on in the game where they actually had the structural deformation of the anaconda, where if you shot certain parts of it, certain parts of the ship would actually, you know, dynamically get destroyed and show up on the model. I always thought that was so, so cool in the early years, and I can understand why it's probably quite a complex thing to actually program in game for everything, but It was one of the things that I thought looked so cool in the early years. I would love that, and boarding from ship to ship to be in game. Mr. Jarvis, what about you?
You're probably asking the wrong person. I think, you know, as I've said, it's I would always ask for masses of more single player content. And it's fair to say that it's been long enough since I've played it that there's probably more stuff in it than, you know, than I can even imagine. I mean, I will say, I'm going to sound like a massive traitor, but I have played quite a lot of No Man's Sky. And I think that is much closer to the model of the kind of content I like. You can jump into a system and you'll be thrown into the middle of a mission that you suddenly need to do there and then. And there's kind of loops around, you know, you go and do one thing at a particular location and that then ends up prompting you to have to then go and do something else. It's a different kind of scale of game. I mean, I would definitely second the ability to walk around inside your ship. And we've certainly had fun over the years with games where, you know, you have to kind of switch to first person mode and repel borders. I mean, even thinking about the stuff we used to do with like Pulsar and stuff like that, I think that kind of cooperative PvE experience is much closer to the sort of thing that I tend to look for in a game. But yeah, I think, to be honest, I'm not really the target audience.
No, but it's a good shout in terms of how they could bring sort of single player missions the same way that No Man's Sky into Elite Dangerous and make it a little bit bespoke. I mean, they did put in the nav beacons, didn't they, with certain sort of story elements and things which you can go and explore for tourist reasons, but I guess they're not mission markers per se.
Yeah, and as I would freely acknowledge, I mean, I stopped playing before a lot of the content has been, you know, that kind of stuff has been put in there. I think the last update that I actually played was the detachable fighters that you could install in your ships. And that was about the last thing I did. So yeah. I'm not going to criticize them for stuff not being in game, which it's entirely possible that they added since I last played it.
But they haven't. No, it's still very much, it's very broad as opposed to sort of lots of individual missions and stuff there where you've got a set of story arcs that pan out. But what about you, Mr. Stabler? What would you add in?
Well, I seem to remember this being asked like multiple times over the years of me when I was on a panel at LaveCon, and I've always answered the same thing, and that is the atmospheric landings. Because, I mean, I can take or leave the big game hunting, don't get me wrong. but that's one thing. You had them in Frontier, and you had them in First Encounters. So it's the one thing left that it hasn't managed to replicate from the previous games, in my opinion. And I am fully aware of the fact that, you know, with a modern high-res game engine, obviously it's a big ask, you know, but it was actually one of the main features touted on the original Kickstarter. So hence why I've always had a bit of a bee in my bonnet about it. And, you know, I know when we... back in the early days where we were just pontificating what we could do in this amazing game that didn't exist yet. You know, we did talk about, oh, wouldn't it be cool to kick back on a space station, have a chat with your buddies and a drink. And I, you know, you can meet up in stations now. Great. But I wouldn't have implemented that first over the planetary landings. Even if they just did something quite rudimentary and then they could have come back and did beauty passes like they did with the rest of the game and the other planets. So, yeah, that is kind of the one thing that's missing. And I suppose if tomorrow they announced that they were rolling it out, I would have to come back to the game simply for that one feature, because it's a killer feature in my book. It, unfortunately, though, it doesn't add necessarily to the gameplay, really.
Yeah.
It is just a prettiness. I mean, I suppose now that everybody's able to get out of their ships and do a bit of first-person gaming... you know, it'd provide some good backdrops for that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's the one thing I wish that they had.
I will say, as a little friendly taunt, I mean, you know, we always used to joke about the fact that David Braben kept referencing the sort of big game hunting on planets and shooting dinosaurs or whatever. But I want to say, you know, you want to go to a planet, shoot animals, big game hunting. No Man's Sky does a lot of that.
Has anybody else got anything else they want to add to the episode? Things that they would like us to discuss that we haven't so far?
I think there's one thing that I feel quite proud of and should mention. So we're recording this about a week and a half after the World Convention of Science Fiction. And I had two books released at the World Convention of Science Fiction, which was pretty amazing. But the one that's specifically relevant here is that Pierce Publishing did an anthology of stories from the great and the good of SF at the moment, plus me, in the honor of Robert Holstock. And so there's a collection of short stories, a publication called Heartwood that's out at the moment, which is celebrating his Mythago Wood series, which is the stuff that he's most famous for outside of Elite. And then obviously he's famous in Elite for the Dark Wheel. So yeah, I was delighted to be asked by the estate and the editor to contribute a story to it. So there's a little story from me in the middle. I think I managed to sneak a tiny Elite reference into the into the story. There might be something in there. But yeah, so you know, I did want to just mention it because of the, you know, the Holstock connection.
No, nice. Definitely be on the lookout for that. And where can people grab it from?
So from the PS Publishing website, but you'll also see it on Amazon. It's called Heartwood. It's the Heartwood Anthology in honor of Robert Holstock.
No, great shout out. I will quickly do the shout outs, and the shout out really for this special episode has to go to the current Lave Radio crew. Keep up the amazing work you guys do. It is phenomenal that you've managed to get to your 500th episode. It is absolutely, truly amazing. So keep at it, and we will keep listening. But that's it for this special episode of Lave Radio. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, then you can find contact detail links in the contact us menu of the laveradio.com website. Do let the team know if you have any questions or if there's anything you'd like them to discuss in future episodes. They record Lave Radio live on a Tuesday evening at 8:30, and it's streamed out on laveradio.com/live. Thanks to my friends in the black for coming back and squeezing in this sidewinder once again. Alan Stroud, Chris Jarvis, John Stabler, and the amazing Grant Woolcott. Until next time, commanders, fly safe, and if you can't do that, fly deep. A massive thanks to my friends in the black for coming back and squeezing in this sidewinder once again. Alan Stroud, Chris Jarvis, John Stabler, and the amazing Grant Woolcock. Until next time, commanders, fly safe, and if you can't do that, fly dangerous.
Sorry. Did you say Woolcock?
Yeah, he did.
You have to do a pickup there.
Ah, didn't Woolcock. Here's Woolcott. It's what's written down here.
Woolcock. Yes, you sounded like you called him Woolcock.
You did.
Okay, hold on. Thanks to my friends in the black for coming back and squeezing in this sidewinder once again. Alan Stroud, Chris Jarvis, John Stabler, and the amazing Grant Woolcott. Until next time, commanders, fly safe, and if you can't do that, fly dangerous.
I thought you'd double down with just a Grant Cock.
I was so going to do it. I was really going to emphasize it, but I thought, no, that's actually not as funny as you think it is in your head.